I was at Yarra Valley Vineyard on Thursday night. There's a few people from here there as well, as mentioned, and I got a sense there that good stuff that happens there, it kind of filters through the movement. And I get the same sense here as God does really good stuff here, it does filter through the movement, I guess, to us smaller, newer churches. So whatever God's doing amongst you here, it's not just for you. It's not just for the people who live in Berwick area. It's for all the kingdom and all of the vineyard. And it travels up the East Link to Mitcham, where we are. And it does that quite at a rapid rate now, which is really good. Didn't take us long to get here this morning. Got here quite early, which is unique, isn't it, in vineyard circles. Early in church just is an oxymoron, really. My name's Mike. Rochelle is my wife, and you will hear Eloise, our one-year-old daughter, throughout my talk today. You may have heard my son Joshua, who is 4, and Ethan, who is 7, who are off with the kids. That's my family. I'm their dad and their husband. I and my wife are the pastors of Suburban Community Vineyard Church. We're in Mitcham. Been going for nearly 4 years now. And I think we're trying to do the same thing as you are, hear from God and do what he says. We've found that kind of this year, our kind of fourth, was it 3.5 year, it's kind of really moving forward in that, which is really good. I'm also a school teacher, so it was a bit weird arriving to a school on a Sunday. I felt like I had to work. And I'm a pastor as well, so kind of working anyway. But I was trained in the performing arts and in music, and I've kind of left that behind now. I'm in charge of, in my school, it's called PAIRS, Personal Enrichment and Religious Studies. Basically, we talk about Jesus and the Gospels and biblical studies, RE, basically. We also, it's values education, it's also health education. So if anyone asks me what is PAIRS, it's sex and drugs and Jesus. Probably not in that order, but we start with Jesus usually, and then out of that, it's really good actually, it's a pretty unique program. So I'm paid to talk about Jesus and talk about values and adolescent issues. It's really exciting. So that's my week. I also ride my fixie, which is a bicycle that I made. It's a single gear. It's orange. Well, it's actually tangerine. It's really nice. I should have got a picture of it to show you. It's really nice. Push bike, not motorbike. I'm also a soccer fan. Looking forward to July, August, the World Cup. Yep. Thank you, young man. I should just have you stand here as my little mascot with your T-shirt on. And I'm a musician and worship leader, and I don't have a lot of opportunity to do that anymore, but it's still a big passion of mine. So if I group all my life together in one talk, that's what it is today. I don't really have a title for it. Well, I do, but it doesn't really mean much to you. It's more for me to make sure I know what I'm talking about. If you increase the percentage of that happening, we'll all get through the next half hour. But we'll talk about worship. But I don't want to talk about how we worship or why we worship or any of the things in worship. I really want to talk about an aspect of worship that we don't think about a lot, and I never really did. And this is kind of something that dawned on me last year. You're asked to speak at a church that's not yours, it's quite unique. In my own church, we have a bit of a teaching program. So at the moment, we're looking at transformation, and kind of all these talks over a few months will be about this topic. And you kind of, as a pastor, you're also in charge of the place, kind of. So you have these other things going on in your mind, or this, you know, this is where I want them to go, and it's kind of a pastor kind of leading thing that you do. That's not my place here. I'm just a guy who's been asked to speak. You actually really rely on God. You ask him, what do you want to speak about? And actually, there's not much else. there. I don't know really much about you at all. I know that you've got weird pastors, but that's the only thing. Actually, only one of them's weird. You can guess which one that is. The other one's quite lovely, actually. I just wanted to say about Jeff and Joe also that they've really spoken into our lives over the last few years, and they're really wonderful. And I hope you look after them, because they're worth it. And they really give a lot to the movement. They give a lot to us, Rosh and I, as newbies at this. And yeah, we just thank you guys for being in our lives. So, this is what I reckon God has given me for you today. I had my iPod. I did this joke and I gave up on it, so don't worry. I was about, who hasn't, put your hand if you have an iPhone. Okay, quite a few of you. I was going to make a joke that I invented a new phone, and I actually duct taped my phone to my iPod. And yeah, so it was as funny as it was going to be. And now my iPod's all sticky because of the duct tape. Anyway, I set my iPod to lots of different playlists. At any one time, my playlist will reflect what's going on in my life. Okay, so at the moment I have a jogging playlist, because I've got this crazy idea that jogging's good for you. So I'm doing that every now and again, and there's a jogging playlist. I have a playlist that's Happy Mike. So, you know, feeling good about my life. It's kind of U2, Coldplay-ish kind of, you know, that music that's kind of, yeah, it's just kind of a backdrop to my life. It's going really well. But then I have to confess I've got some more dark, moody, emo playlists. And there's a band called Massive Attack that I'm into quite a bit. Some of these kind of, they're kind of dark and melancholy. When you're a kind of a brooding artist, you need these kind of backups in your life. And so sometimes I like things a little bit dark. We'll explain that. This is what I think our worship lies. Our lives of worship, our walks with God alike, I think, is that we when things are going really well, when things are going really well with God, our worship seems to reflect that. And there are other times when things aren't going so well, our worship also reflects that. But I actually think that God has called us to have one form of worship. All of our body, all of our mind, all of our soul. It doesn't really matter what kind of frame of mind we're at. It doesn't really matter our walk with God is at the moment. There's only really one way to worship. Now, the reality of that, it kind of works a bit differently, doesn't it? Okay, that's our kind of goal. But where our lives are at any one time can be a mixture of darkness and light. And that's kind of how we come to God. I'll explain what I mean. If you have a Bible, can you please turn to 1 John? It's John's first letter. 1 John chapter 1, verse 5 to 7. 1 John 1, 5 to 7. Can't really hide behind this thing, can you, if you wanted to? It's kind of clear. That's good. 1 John 1, 5 to 7. This is the message we have heard from him and declare to you. God is light. In him there is no darkness at all. If we claim to have fellowship with him yet walk in the darkness, we lie and do not live by the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his Son, purifies us from all sin. John here is talking to his followers in the city of Ephesus, and what he's explaining is that there's two realities. You might call them two kingdoms, or two states of being. You might want to call it that as well. One of them is darkness, and one of them is light. If you ever wanted to think of an analogy that's kind of poles apart, darkness and light are probably the most obvious analogies. And so he's used that. It's actually used throughout the Bible to describe a reality that's way over here and a reality that's way over there, or a state of being that's way over there or way over here. So I'm calling that our spiritual state of being. You're either in darkness or you're in light. In Scripture, sometimes darkness refers to sin or evil. But sometimes it's referring to something else. Here he uses the terms scotia and phos. And to understand these terms, let's flick to the beginning of time. Actually, before the beginning of time. That's in Genesis, by the way. Genesis chapter 1, 2 to 5. If you can be bothered, go way back there. You should be bothered. Genesis 1, 2 to 5. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2 to 5. Now, the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Here the poem in Genesis is describing darkness as being different to light. And actually God calls this separation. Light is different to dark. So what is light and what is dark? How is dark described? Formless, empty, and without life. If you read through, do you notice that all the creative life stuff happens during the day? And I will describe them as obsessing over what has been done to them. The Israelites obsess over what has been done to them. So when John says, if we claim to have fellowship with him, yet walk in darkness, we lie and do not live by truth, he's acknowledging that darkness is an obsession. We can be consumed by grief, despair, and brokenness. And in fact, often we worship it. We give it a place in our lives where light should be. Now, I'm not saying that as Christians, we are without darkness. I'll get onto that in a moment. But I think as just general, the human race, we obsess or worship the things that are done to us. It's in loneliness for me. That was my kind of darkness, loneliness. Since I was 7 years old, my family, every two or three years, mostly two, have moved house, and mostly to interstate, so all over the place. So I've only ever stayed in one town for about, you know, actually now is the longest it's been. I've been in the house that I'm living now, been there for 10 years, and even then I had a half-time break. We went to live in the UK for a little bit and came back. And so I'm just used to this thing that happens every two or three years, up we get. And so you can imagine what that does to a young boy's sense of well-being and his sense of, or my sense of, being able to have meaningful relationships if you're moving interstate every two or three years. And so I went to a total of 9 schools, and I still get this three-year itch. Now, if you look over my life, every 3 years, even now, I have this thing of what's going to happen. So about 3 years ago, we planted a church. Actually, it was more than that, wasn't it? And then, you know, just had Eloise a year ago, so I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you'll have a midlife crisis and buy a Harley or something like that. That could suit me quite well, except I don't like motorbikes. I don't know, something. I'll think of something, don't worry. Maybe that thing needs to stop in my life. But there's this thing that in my life has been kind of disappointing as a child and lonely. That was my darkness. When I was 19, this darkness consumed me. That was kind of the climax of this life of kind of living in darkness. The trials of loneliness. And it climaxed with, I finished year 12. And, you know, I'd been in this school for about 3 years. And, you know, when you think of someone from 15 to 18, you know, there's a lot of relationship building that happens there. And so I had really strong friendships, strong connections. I'd become a man and had all this life direction. You know, I got into the course I wanted at uni. I was kind of set on a bit of a path. I'm growing up now. I'm going forward. And then we moved to Melbourne. I was in Perth, so we moved from Perth to Melbourne. and I decided to come with him. I was a bit of a mummy's boy. I wasn't going to stay there. I was too young. We moved to Melbourne, and that's when my world came crashing down. Whatever world I actually managed to salvage over that previous 3 years was gone. So now I'm an adult. Now I'm a man, young man, with in darkness. To cope with my loneliness back in Perth when I was, 17, 18, I'd found lots of things. There's lots of things that you can find solace in when you're lonely and dark. It's actually really easy. Okay, drinking's a pretty good one. Marijuana wasn't bad. Sexual relationships. I was into the rave scene. There's things that are dark that seem to allow human beings to feed on and to find solace in for their own darkness. There's a lot of dark around that's attractive for people who are like me, lonely, looking for something to heal their pain. So I did all that. Now, I was a Christian, well, kind of. I was a church-going bloke. I was playing music in churches, and I was quite involved in church. But in the churches I was in, I wasn't never really shown that Jesus is the answer to my darkness. And I remember about 15 years ago, a lot of churches didn't really talk about this stuff. You kind of went, sang some hymns, and went home. Not like here, not like in the Vineyard. It's somewhere where we know that the kingdom of God has come, and we're actively participating in bringing people from darkness to light. That was never preached in my churches. What happened is one day on Saturday, this is in Melbourne now, I was 19. Saturday, we only just moved, so it was about February or March. No uni courses. We arrived in February, so I'd missed out on all the entrance stuff. So I was kind of nowhere to go. So on Saturday, I woke up at about 5 p.m. And I didn't have friends to drink with. I didn't have, my circle of friends to do kind of that stuff that fed me, which on one hand is kind of healthy. On the other hand, it left me with nothing to find solace in for my loneliness and despair and darkness. So what I did is I got up, I went out to the kitchen to fix me some noodles or something, and as you did when you're 19. And my mum asked, well, what are you doing tonight? And it just hit me, nothing. It just exposed my loneliness. I had nothing to do and no one to do it with. I could have gone to youth group or something like that, but that didn't really, it wasn't the same. I guess I got sick of the childish thing of being taken to church and forced to make friends with the church kids, because that was who was around. And I was just kind of had enough of that. And so I fell onto the couch at this realization and cried my eyes out. Now, my mum is a minister, or was a minister, and I think the Spirit of God spoke to her. She moved in the Spirit at this time, and I think God spoke to her. And my mum led me to Jesus. She actually showed me that. Well, she didn't do much, actually, which is probably the way it usually goes, isn't it? She kind of did something. She might have prayed. She might have prayed in tongues or something like that. All I saw was light. My face was buried in the cushions. I was soaked in tears and snot. And my eyes were closed, and all I could see was light. And it was the first time I'd seen Jesus. I knew who Jesus was. The first time I'd seen Jesus. And Jesus appeared to me as light. He told me he loved me. And I had sensed this lightness in my body. And the darkness left. Not totally. But the darkness left as I cried out to him in my despair. John exhorts his followers to walk in the light. And so since 19, that's me. You have this experience when you meet Jesus of there's some light, you get lifted up out of the darkness. And then there's this aspect of walking in the light. And what it just might not relate to you, but what I've found that connects with that is, for me, it's worship. Walking in the light is about worship. Because we obsess or worship the things that are done to us. I obsessed over my loneliness. It was all-consuming. I had a whole lifestyle built around trying to medicate this pain of loneliness. And so I guess my walking out was obsessing and worshipping over the King of Light. In John's Gospel, he states a few times, Jesus is the light that shines in the darkness. In Acts 26:18, Jesus also says that we are to turn from this state of darkness into the state of light. In fact, the Gospel writers say that it is impossible for darkness to penetrate the light. They stand opposed. There's no way that darkness can come into light. There's no dark torch. There's no dark candle. Okay? And you can't just bring darkness into Jesus. It's the other way around. They stand opposed. You cannot worship or live in two states of being. It's actually really hard. It's hard work. And I tried it. I tried to live as a Christian boy, and I tried to live in darkness. The darkness won in my childhood, when I was a teenager, but not ultimately. The Apostle Paul knew this reality. He knew that there was a way, and only one way, to come out of the darkness. And the good news, the really, really good news, is that it has already been done. Paul says, come to the light. The light exists. God separated darkness from light. There's light that's already been there. We live in what's called a post-gospel reality. Something happened 2,000 years ago. Jesus defeated darkness by going to the pit of darkness himself. He experienced the darkness. That's what it was all about. That's why he had to die. To experience the darkness, to go to the dark place, to live in the kingdom of darkness himself. And then he rose from death to life into glorious light. The generous rule and reign of God, the kingdom of light, has been established to bring us out of the darkness and into the light. In John 8:12, John says that Jesus has literally pulled us up out of the darkness into the light, much like I experienced when I was 19. You just feel yourself kind of being lifted up out of where you are. And so in his letter, John exhorts us to walk in the light. And what I think he is saying is this: worship Jesus, obsess over Jesus, and walk in what he has already done for you. See, Jesus died and went into darkness and then rose into glorious light. That's it. There's nothing else. But it works. Okay, there's nothing else that needs to be done. It's already happened for us. We just need to worship him for it. There's a guy called Jeff Mannion who said this: you will not escape the darkness by obsessing what was done to you. You'll escape it by obsessing what was done for you. For me, that's what worship is. It's turning from a life of obsession and worship for the things that have been done to me, the things that are the darkness that consumed me, and now spending my life worshiping and obsessing over the one who did it for me. Worship is the way we obsess over the right thing. We spend our days in stress and worry over our bank accounts, our family, our work life, our job security, and lack of meaningful relationships. We obsess over the dark things because they're there a lot. But we worship to obsess over the one who... That's the thing that kind of excites us, I suppose. The wham, bam stuff. Didn't you have a special word, Jeff, that you use? Is it bam or something like that? No, okay. But the thing is, like, when we, you pray for God to come and heal someone who doesn't know Jesus, and out of the encounter with God of being healed, and they just see the tangible expression of Jesus' love, and straight away they kind of turn to that. I guess I'm speaking to others who are in darkness. or speaking about some people who are in darkness. And sometimes power encounters are the things that they've got to come to one. just in my experience, darkness was a consuming thing, and it took love, and it took the inbreaking power of Jesus. It took the light of Jesus to show me that there is light and there he is, and it's been done for me. Now, I asked before, is there any darkness in Berwick? There's been, over the last year and a half or something, a year and a half ago, I had opportunities, people were praying for Jeff in, things that he's ever said to me, and I said that to Jeff at the time, was that I think God wants to use you and use this church to literally bring people from the brink of death. I didn't tell you part of my story when I was 19 is that that day, that morning, I'd woken up and I'd made a list of 10 things, 10 ways to kill myself. Now, I'm one of those guys that are really queasy, and I faint at the sight of blood and needles and things like that. So most of them were never going to happen. That's when sometimes fear is healthy. and I wasn't quite that serious at that time anyway about doing these things. But a lot of people actually make these lists. If I decided to go down that road and I decided not to live anymore, how would I do it? A lot of people do think like that. And so it was at this. This is the context of me breaking down in front of my mum and really in front of Jesus, is that I didn't want to live anymore. And that's what I said to mum. I crashed onto the couch and said, "Mum, I don't want to live anymore." And so my word, or what God kind of told me to say to Jeff, and then I guess to all of you, this is 1.5 years ago, is that there are people around here who are on the brink of death, quite literally. People who are contemplating suicide, or people at least who are so dark in their way they live and so kind of away from just any kind of reaching out to Jesus, is that they're, you could probably picture walking zombies. They're kind of walking around half dead. And I guess God was telling me to say that I think he wants to use you guys to bring these people out of that dark place into light. Have a ministry to people who don't want to live anymore. There is a reason why they should live. It's called the kingdom of light. And the kingdom of heaven has come for people such as them. And then the last 6 months is another thing. You only asked me in November or something to do this, but it's kind of 6 months ago I got this thing, and then just as I was preparing to talk, the Lord reminded me of it. There's a few people here. We're going to ask Jesus to identify you a bit later, and it's probably all of you, but there's probably some particular people. I asked before, is there any dark places in Berwick? I don't know Berwick at all. It's like a nice little country town in the main street, but I'm supposing, knowing Melbourne the way I do and knowing Australia in the way I do, that there's some people in Berwick Shire or area that are living in a bit of darkness. But the thing is, it's hard to see people in darkness, because where do they live? They live in darkness. Okay, they're not running around happy and bouncy. If they're doing any of the lifestyle stuff that I was doing, I was pretty well hidden. I did it under the cover of dark. I didn't want my mum and dad to know what I was doing, all of that kind of stuff. But it's hard to see people in the dark. You actually have to go and look for them. Or if you are light enough, they will see you. If you're walking down the street or in an alleyway, or you're going out to a party or a rave or whatever where dark people hang out, and there's enough of Jesus showing in you, Do you think that people might actually see the light? I think so. And so that's kind of the two things that I had. I think there's a specific ministry here for the darkest people. Now, the darkest people, I don't know what they're marked by. Okay, it's different for different people and their darkness. Okay, but I think I kind of just now I'm getting this picture of cracking open an egg. Okay, and just this yolk. Everyone has life in them. You know, Jesus is kind of has the ability to shine light in anybody, but sometimes it's an egg that needs to be cracked open.